Before we get started, a quick disclosure. This podcast is for entertainment purposes only. Nothing you hear is an offer or solicitation to buy or sell any investment. And with that, hello and welcome to the Range of Capital podcast. This is a 15-minute long podcast and the clock starts now. I am Andrew Walker, a portfolio manager at Rangeley. And with me as always is my co-host and Rangeley's founder, Chris DeMuth. It is Monday, April 4th. And Chris, I think we've got a lot of interesting stuff to talk about. We've got the Virgin Alaska merger, which is Virgin Alaska, just sounds funny. And then we've got the pending Sun Edison bankruptcy finally to talk about. But before we get there, I have a question for you. Donald Trump over the weekend gave an interview and said we're on the verge of a massive recession and now is a terrible time to buy stocks. So should we even bother taping this podcast, or should we just go? Should we just say sell and go back to happy hour?
I think that's it. I think we can just quote Mr. Trump and leave it at that.
Okay, podcast over. We're off. We might have some thoughts on Donald Trump at the end of this podcast, but why don't we kick off by ignoring our advice to sell and talk a little bit about Virgin Airlines selling to Alaska Air. Why don't you kick us off?
Virgin Airlines, it was announced this morning, is selling to Alaska Air for $57 per share. This was after a frenzied bidding war between the winner, which we'll discuss that in a second, and JetBlue.
Yep. So this was a absolute huge premium. Mm-hmm. It was 89% premium to what Virgin's, and the ticker is VA, to what Virgin's stock price was before it was announced or started to get rumors that they were in deal talks, and a 57% premium to Friday's closing share price. That in and of itself is pretty rare too. We'll talk about that in a second as well. But let's talk about why Alaska and JetBlue both wanted to buy Virgin Airlines. Why don't you take it?
VA, there's a scarcity premium. If this was strategically what you wanted to do, there are not that many ways to do it at this point.
Yep. So there are four major airlines: Delta, United, I think American, and Southwest. I'd have to refresh my memory, but there are four major airlines who control national markets, routes everywhere, and everyone else is trying to get up to scale to compete to them. And in this case, Virgin controls a lot of really attractive routes. Mm-hmm. They have slots at slot-controlled airports like LaGuardia and DC's Reagan. They have a lot of share in the California market. And by buying them, someone could quickly kind of fill out their national presence. And as you said, there aren't a lot of airlines that offer that type of thing. Also, in terms of strategy, the deal is worth, they're buying Virgin for $4 billion, and they're forecasting $225 million in synergies. So kind of 7% of the deal price is just synergies, annual synergies. It's very rare to find a ratio of synergies to deal price that high.
Price is a result of supply and demand, and whatever the demand is, the slots, and especially with controlled airports such as LaGuardia, you know what it is. And so that's kind of one of the two characteristics you need to know is fixed,
yep.
And these guys have a lot of them.
There's one supply and a lot of demand in that case.
Exactly.
So there are two interesting takeaways, and we've kind of hinted at them. I think one is how the market might underappreciate the value of strategic assets. Mm-hmm. I'll talk about that in a second, but why don't you kick us off by talking about buyer's remorse and why, when we say Alaska won this bidding war, we might put one into quotes.
Whenever I go to an auction, like a charity auction, and I pay for something, somebody says congratulations.
Which is rare for Chris to be the top bidder at a charity auction.
I always like to be the second highest and try to get credit out of that for pushing it up but not having it cost me anything.
You know, just a side anecdote, because we get a lot of comments from people who say they love to hear the side anecdotes. My dad is an avid listener, and every time you talk about how much you love free stuff and you think you might love free stuff more than anyone else, he says, I want you to tell Chris I love free stuff just as much as him. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners feel the same way.
From a marital perspective, I think I should get credit for things that I bid on and almost get but not quite, because I feel like it shows a certain generosity. If you bid on the diamond necklace, you don't quite get it. I think if you bid 70% of the way there, you get 70% of the credit. Pretty obvious to me. Doesn't always work that way.
Knowing Elizabeth, I think Chris gets 0% of the credit for that.
That's closer to how she thinks about it.
But let's go to the buyer's remorse.
Even an acquisitive CEO, somebody who's active in the deal market, they might have only done 5 deals in their life. Mm-hmm. They are working with an investment banker who's done 5 deals this year.
Yep.
And they control the mindset. They are the high-priced helper who is also the trusted confidant.
Who gets paid only if a deal goes through for the most part.
They're paid for a transaction. They're not paid for the transaction working. And your shareholders are paid for the transaction working or failing. Mm-hmm. And they tell you, congratulations, you're the winner.
The high-priced helper tells you
the high-priced helper helps that. And these CEOs are typically super competitive people. If you found them in junior high school or high school, they were probably varsity athletes. They probably mm-hmm. love winning. They hate losing. And so when they're told, congratulations, you've won, I'm going to tell you that if you only raise by a dollar, mm-hmm. they typically really try to win things whether or not it makes sense on a price basis.
And in this case, they won the asset, but the only losers in this deal were kind of their own shareholders mm-hmm. because Alaska Airlines shares were down 5% as people digested the very high price tag for Virgin Airlines.
Yep.
And I'm going to talk about, I think that it might also signal that the market can underappreciate the value of these rare strategic assets. So normally when it gets leaked, you know, last week it got leaked, JetBlue and Virgin were bidding for, or JetBlue and Alaska were bidding for Virgin. Mm-hmm. Normally the share price will go, you know, if it was 10, it'll go up to 13, and then the takeout will be 13.50 or 14. But in this case, the shares were way, way under what the ultimate price was. They were kind of in the 30s and the takeout price was 57. So it shows just how valuable these rare strategic assets can be and that the market might not appreciate how much people are willing to bid, maybe even through what a rational acquirer would show with the synergies and everything. And for investors, if you can recognize rare strategic assets, you might be able to take advantage of it and make above market returns. In this case, you would have made over 50% in a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is it on Virgin. Why don't we go to Sun Edison, unfortunately, maybe for the last time. But before we get there, a quick request. If you like this podcast, please be sure to follow us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. If you already follow us, please be sure to rate us. It means a lot to us, and it encourages us to keep taping these podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
So Chris, why don't we go to Sun Edison? I think everyone's in agreement at this point. A bankruptcy filing is pending. Probably within the next week. It could be tomorrow. It could be next week, but soon. Why don't you catch us up to speed on what's going on?
Whatever the timeline of the formalities, Sun Edison is, for all intents and purposes, bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
Approximately. They've missed a payment already this month, and we are early in the month of April. It will be interesting for their complex capital structure. It will also be interesting for their couple YieldCos.
Yep. So Sun Edison, April 1st, they had a $2.3 million interest payment on their $2.6 million interest payment on their convertible notes. Mm-hmm. And Sun Edison is a company with billions and billions of dollars in debt and assets, and they had to skip the interest payment. And the only reason you skip an interest payment that small is a bankruptcy filing is imminent. I'll mention real quickly that we talked about Sun Edison last on our March 2nd podcast entitled "Has the Sun Set on Sun Edison's Acquisition of Vivint Solar?" And why don't we kind of rewind back to that and talk about what's happened since then? I'll kick it off and jump in whenever you want to. Since then, Vivint broke the deal. Mm-hmm. And at the time, we were speculating that Vivint breaking the deal meant Sun Edison was probably bankrupt. Their claims in breaking the deal that Sun Edison had breached their contract were going to be huge, and it became increasingly likely Sun Edison was insolvent. Since then, we started hearing reports that the company was hiring advisors and negotiators trying to negotiate with creditors to do either a prepackaged bankruptcy filing or kind of an out-of-court restructuring. And what I found really interesting was we started hearing these reports right after Vivint.
Mm-hmm.
And even when Vivint happened, we thought Sun Edison was bankrupt. And the stock didn't really move. In fact, when the Vivint deal broke, the stock went up.
Yeah.
And it was just shocking to see this.
It's like when Wile E. Coyote runs off of a cliff and he's just suspended in the air until he looks down.
Yeah.
And it was just, he's over the Grand Canyon. Sun Edison's been over the Grand Canyon. The bankruptcy legal advisors had conflicts and were clearly hired.
Yeah.
Then the bankruptcy financial advisors had conflicts and were clearly hired. So they were paying a significant amount of money to lawyers and bankers to help them with a bankruptcy process several weeks ago,
and
it just sat up there.
It's like shareholders, when the Vivint deal were announced, didn't like it, and then the Vivint deal was called off, and shareholders were like, the deal's off, rejoice, it's party times again. And they forgot that, oh yeah, there were all these legal remedies that Vivint would have, and oh yeah, Sun Edison is hiring all these people to explore bankruptcy. But so they started negotiations, and the stock didn't really start breaking until last week when negotiations with all their creditors broke down, and specifically when one of their yield co's, Terraform Global, filed an 8K that said we can't file our financials because SunEdison is probably about to go bankrupt and they control us, so we can't file without them. And it gets really strange because Terraform Global today, they're suing SunEdison. So this is a controlled company suing their parent company and saying SunEdison took money from us, promised to give us projects in return, and instead they used it to temporarily avoid bankruptcy. So Chris, why don't we talk about some of our takeaways from the SunEdison, and then we'll go to the opportunities in the bankruptcy.
I just have two little thematic ones I want to throw in there, and then I want to hear from you. The first one is that if you want to know how something is going, in this case, I would say the pessimists were increasingly statistical and rigorous in terms of things in this type of situation tend to go badly. Mm-hmm. The optimists, I would say, were increasingly allegorical. I bought it at $8. I would very much like it to go back, and I hope that there's a story that will get me there.
Yep.
And so whenever you see the two sides bifurcating into stats versus mm-hmm. allegories, be very thoughtful about whether you want to be on the allegorical side. The numbers usually win. And then secondly, I would say that when you deal with fraud, and let me use a nasty word here that may related to things that have happened at SunEdison, that fraud, in my mind, is not something that happens coming out of evil. It happens coming out of pressure.
Yep.
Normal people, other than the very few saints that I believe exist, other than the very few monsters that I believe exist, people who either almost always do the right thing or almost never do, mm-hmm. almost everybody, just regular people, they are malleable, they can be influenced by events. And so the question is, are they in a circumstance that they can withstand pressure? With enough pressure, you end up with fraud.
It's great points. And on the fraud point, you know, from Enron to Valiant, I don't think you'll ever see that the people themselves were evil. From all accounts, in most cases, the people were very generous, giving mm-hmm. to charities and everything. They were, I believe Valiant's term recently has been, there was a culture of pressure and meeting numbers mm-hmm. that leads to frauds, and it tends to be small things that escalate. Great points on your end. So Chris, we've talked about what's happening. We've talked about SunEdison's going bankruptcy. There's four different ways to play a SunEdison bankruptcy here. You can play SunEdison itself. You can play Vivint Solar. You can play Terraform Power, which is the U.S. solar assets. Or you can play Terraform Global, which is the global assets outside the U.S. Why don't we go through all of them? Which one do you want to start with?
I will just touch on SunEdison itself.
Great.
It seems like it makes sense.
Easiest one to touch on, too.
Even though that we as a policy disclose as little as we are required to, I will say we are both short SunEdison.
Yep.
We've done this in different ways. I have been writing SunEdison calls. I believe it is fair to say that you have been buying SunEdison puts.
That is right.
I think that you will end up being the wiser, as it turns out. We've had different reasons to set it up.
I like to think I'm always the wiser, Chris, but
I was making an approximate comment to this specific circumstance. But as it turns out, so there are different ways to do it. The likelihood that our two outcomes would be highly correlated was high,
mm-hmm.
But I would say short, not long.
In this case, why don't I just... The way finance works, just to back it up for a second, is...
Oh, I forgot. You told me never to mention
that. No. That's fine. Yeah. We try not to mention options on this, but that's fine. The way finance works is there's a capital structure. So at the top is senior secured bank loans. Then there are bonds, which is general debt. Then there's preferred stock. And then there's common equity. A publicly traded stock is the common equity. And in this case, there are bonds that are way, way above the commonly traded stock that are trading at an effective price of zero, so implying they won't recover anything. So if those are trading at zero, the common stock in SunEdison is, it would take, you know, they found that they were sitting on, there was literally just billions of cash buried under their headquarters mm-hmm. for the company to cover. The equity's recovering nothing. The preferreds are recovering nothing. Maybe the bonds will get something.
If you go back to my stats versus allegories, I would generally give the people towards the top of the cap structure good marks at being mostly statistical.
Yeah.
And where a lot of the allegories lie, it's the bottom of the capital structure. Even after saying this, I mean, my biggest comment I've gotten today on things we've said is, how dare you say, kind of a sense of shock and betrayal that
yep.
we're talking about bankruptcy instead of this. And those are common stockholders. Those are not people in the debt.
So let me move on to Vivint, and I'm going to cover Vivint really quickly.
Sure.
I own a little bit. The thought process here is the core the core business has issues, but there's some value there. They're going to have a huge claim on Sun Edison for willful breach of their merger. The question for them is really going to be, is the claim high enough in the capital structure to have any recovery? At this point, it actually looks unlikely. It looks like they're not going to be able to recover anything in Sun Edison's bankruptcy. But as an option, it's going to be a huge, huge claim. I think the claim could be worth more than $5 per Vivint shares. Vivint's trading at $2.50. If you think about, you know, even if they recover 10 or 20% of that claim, it could be a really nice number. I own a very small bit. I'll disclose that. I think you might own a very small bit as well. Chris doesn't own any. He's on me. So I own a very small bit. Speculative, but that's what I'm thinking. Let's go to Terp and Global really quickly. And I'll say we don't follow Global very closely. They're much more dependent on Sun Edison. Very interesting because they have the suit against Sun Edison. But why don't you take Terp a little bit?
I was going to pass on Global simply because I don't know anything about it. But Terp, or as much. Terp, we own. It is has, I think, always been at every point and is certainly now far and away, orders of magnitude, our biggest exposure.
Within this capital structure. Within this capital. Not overall.
Within the capital structure. Within the issue we're currently talking about. No, it's not particularly.
It's still
big,
a modest position. For us, yes.
But it's where we have made our bet here. Mm-hmm. We think that it has value. That value is not highly dependent upon Sun Edison. Sun Edison manages it. But in fact, my predilection would be for to run off value. You know, the idea that, you know, by God, they're going to have to stop doing new things, I would say,
great.
Great. Excellent.
Take the cash from your operating assets and just give it back to us.
It's generally what I wish companies would do. Yep. Stop. And so we think it has value. We think it could be dicey going through the Sun Edison bankruptcy process, but bring it on.
So from my seat, there's three things here. There are it owns a lot of very valuable operating assets that throw off a lot of cash. That's great. We estimate their value at $15-ish per share. You know, reasonable people can defer if it's $12 or $20, but we think it's around $15. And the big questions going forward are going to be three. Sun Edison's bankruptcy, there's a lot of, how does it impact their purchasing power agreements? They sell their solar generation to utilities. Does it impact them at all? Terraform Power filed a 8K today that said it probably doesn't affect that. Sun Edison operates a lot of the business. Is that impacted as Sun Edison goes bankrupt? That's a question. A lot of Terraform's project level non-recourse debt, Sun Edison has guaranteed it, and it could be called as when Sun Edison goes bankrupt. Not sure how that plays out. The big question today is Terraform and Sun Edison did a lot of mergers together, and the drafting on those merger agreements seems poor. Sun Edison owes a lot in earnout payments, and the big question is if Terraform will be liable for what Sun Edison owed in those earnout payments.
In real estate, I find that you can be you can see the quality of houses in the boom markets. It goes way down. And people are just doing things really fast. They tend to do it really poorly.
Yep.
In this case, when you do M&A really fast, you do the drafting of deals really bad.
Sun Edison did M&A very quickly. Terraform joined them in buying the operating assets, and the drafting was poor, and Terraform might be on the hook. I think that's the big question for shareholders today. From my standpoint, it's impossible to know how it all plays out, but buying today around $9 per share for assets that might be worth $15 seems like an interesting bet. Mm-hmm. Modest position for the both of us. We'll hit it again in our disclosures, but that's all the time we have today. A quick reminder, if you like this podcast, please be sure to follow us and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, or SoundCloud. Before we hit our disclosures, two updates. First, we'll be presenting at the MicroCap Conference in Toronto next week. If you will be there, please come say hello. We'd love to see you. And second, our podcast now has an email address. If you have any feedback for us, please email us at podcast@rangelycapital.com. Both Chris and I get those emails, so we will see everyone. And now for our disclosures. Chris, I think we already hit them, but I'm long Terp and Vivint. We're both short Sun Edison, you through writing calls, me through buying puts. You are long Terp, and you are long a little bit of Virgin Airlines. Is that
correct?
It?
Yes.
Great. Those are our disclosures. Thanks again for listening, and we will talk to you guys later this week.